Hello and welcome to Ask the Expert. I'm your host, Marina Lai. This podcast puts all your burning questions to the specialist so you don't have to. Thank you so much for joining us. Today, my first guest is Michelle Engelke, a therapist who specializes in trauma, and today's topic is emotional neglect. Hi, Michelle. Tell us more about yourself, please.
So my name is Michelle Engelke. I am a trauma therapist and attachment-focused EMDR counselor. I work at my private practice, Liberty Counseling Luxembourg in Eisenborn.
Perfect. For those of us who don't know, what is trauma?
So trauma is a very disconcerting experience, a negative event that you go through. Mm-hmm. Now, trauma is a very subjective experience, which means that what may traumatize me doesn't necessarily traumatize you. It's a very individual experience. So having said that, there are common traumatic events that we can easily identify with, such as being somewhere where there's been a natural disaster, such as an earthquake, or being suffering with a traumatic experience such as being mugged, suffering a car accident. Those are the stereotypical types of traumatic events. However, the types of traumatic events that I deal with, they are a little bit more complex than that. So, for example, the topic of today's podcast is having suffered emotional neglect while growing up, not feeling felt, seen or heard by your caregivers, being emotionally abused by your teacher, or being emotionally abused by your boss at work, or suffering bullying in childhood at school, losing a dear one to cancer or to any other type of sudden death or death. So anything can result in trauma. So just to sum up, it's a very disturbing, upsetting experience that is disconcerting, and it changes your view of the world as a place that is safe for you to be. It changes your view of people, of yourself, and of your future.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so trauma is the thing that you specialize in and is also the topic for today. And we'll also specifically go into emotional neglect. Now, when I announced that you were coming on the show, we then had a lot of questions that came in anonymously. So we're going to work through the questions. I'm going to read them out exactly as they've been submitted to me, because I believe that the wording and the way people have written the question is really important. So I haven't reworded anything, because I think they've had their intention, yes, you know, the way they've submitted it. And even if I see sometimes like a grammatical mistake or something, I always leave it, because I think that person wanted it to be read out and asked that way.
Great counselling skills.
So the first one is, I'd be curious to know if childhood trauma can be resolved so it doesn't affect us anymore in our adult lives. And if yes, what are the methods employed and how effective are they? It's a 3-in-1, I think.
Okay. So yes, trauma can be resolved. There are many ways to address the effects of trauma. And the first one is via self-care, right? So looking after yourself the best you can, eating healthily, exercising, socializing. Getting involved in relationships that you feel supported, that you can be yourself, that you feel loved and you feel ideally appreciated, just enough to make you feel good about yourself. Do your yoga, do your meditation, and if you're not keen on those activities, go for your walks. Spend time in stillness with yourself, reflect over your own behavior, try and invest in productive, functional attitudes at work with the people you love. So engage in life with energy, love, and care. Now, if you find that that is not enough, of course, you can, if you're struggling with anxiety, if you're struggling with insomnia, if you're struggling with built-up anger, if you don't, you find you cannot enjoy yourself, you cannot enjoy life, then, and you link all that to something you have experienced in childhood, I highly recommend that you go and seek help from a trauma therapist, and that you read about trauma, and that you try and find the correct information that will allow you to organize your experience, your narrative, in a way that is coherent and that makes you feel empowered. When you do that, there's a great likelihood that you will heal with time, but just bearing in mind that the type of trauma that is complex, the childhood trauma that occurs during a prolonged period of time, many traumatic events, that this type of trauma, complex trauma, is harder to, it takes longer to heal, even with the help of a professional. So just give yourself time to heal. Be patient. Pace yourself. Invest in self-care. And if you need professional help, invest in professional help. Give yourself time and you will heal.
And how effective are the methods that would be employed?
Right. So therapeutic approaches to trauma, they are usually effective when there is dedication and engagement from the client's part. So therapy is an alliance. It's a collaborative process. So if both people feel engaged and there is chemistry, this is bound to work. And it doesn't really matter if you go and have an EMDR therapist, if you have a CBT therapist, if you have somatic experiencing. It doesn't really matter that much, because the connection that you have with your therapist is what is going to allow you to heal and grow. An empathetic therapist, someone that is there with you, that doesn't judge you, that is the ideal scenario for healing. Now, having said that, nowadays what we talk about when we talk about trauma healing in a therapeutic context, we talk about body work. I'm sure you have heard about that. So approaches that emphasize the somatic, that honor our bodies and trauma that is stored in the body. I have noticed in my personal experience with trauma and professionally that with cognitive therapists, they are very good. You work with the client on their negative beliefs about themselves after the traumatic events, or that they have built up with time growing up in an environment of chronic stress, for example. We do very good work with CBT, working on negative attitudes, negative thinking patterns. The tools are really neat, and people feel that they know how to talk back to negative thinking. It's very, very good. However, because their trauma is deeply rooted in their bodies, they need to drop down, as we say. So not stay so much in their heads, but connect with their bodies and try and connect with the grief that comes from the losses they have suffered. So then to really go deep and access that, therapeutic approaches that work with the somatic, work with the body, they tend to have to produce greater results, greater treatment outcomes.
Interesting. Very interesting. So it's almost like your body has absorbed the trauma, and working with the mental is not enough because the scars are also they are in the body, aren't they? What's happened is in the body. So when we were discussing the topic today, we both decided to go for emotional neglect. How does that tie into your work with trauma and trauma itself?
Right. So when I work with clients, there are all sorts of complaints that they pose to me. Oh, I feel I have low self-esteem. I'm a people pleaser. And the ones that have done the reading, they come with the terms, right? So I'm codependent, or I am emotionally dependent, and I want to work on that. So those clients that don't necessarily know much about haven't done any reading, and they just come with a common complaint of, I suffer from low self-esteem and I don't know why. What happened? I come from a very loving family. I haven't been abused. Why am I this way? Why can't I feel confident and appreciate myself? And there is usually emotional neglect somewhere there in their growing up years and in their adult lives that they don't realize that it's been there all this time, that has had a great impact on how they feel themselves and how they see themselves, how, if they feel lovable or not, if they feel that they matter, right? So emotional neglect is this invisible relationship killer, is this invisible self-esteem killer. And it's because it's something that we lack, that we don't have. It's harder to identify than an instance of abuse, verbal abuse, right? Mm-hmm. Or physical abuse.
Mm-hmm.
This is something a lot more abstract. So let's imagine that today, just to put this into context, this is the first time we've met. I walk in and I go, hi, Marina, so glad to be here. And you go like, yes, fine. And you don't look at me in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, oh, this way. Oh, we're going to be here in this room. And you sit there. And you don't actually acknowledge me as a person, right? I'm just here to do the interview. And there isn't much, I don't feel like you are paying attention to me, that you see me. Now, this is classic emotional neglect. Now, try and multiply that by 1,000 times. And try to apply that to a contest of you being a child. How is that going to make you feel?
Really, really small and invisible.
So almost as if you didn't exist.
Yes.
So how can you feel that you are even a person if people around you are not really acknowledging you, are not looking at you, are not interested in what you're doing, what you are experiencing, if you're feeling good or not, right?
Sorry, I'm speechless. It's just such a good explanation.
So then you start withdrawing. You don't share your experience because you think nobody will care. Nobody will be interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
You won't talk as much when you meet people, or when you do, you go back home and replay what you said and what you did like 1,000 times to feel safe, right? Or you can behave the extreme opposite, which is try your best to please others, to look so good, to say the right things, to be nice, 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 so that you feel seen, that you feel heard, that you feel like a person, that you are yourself. If you feel confident enough in a relational context that you can have interactions with people.
Wow. Let's go on to the next question.
Right.
What is a sign that a child and an adult has experienced emotional neglect?
Right. So a universal sign would be low self-esteem. So not feeling lovable, not feeling that you matter, not feeling that your experience is good enough to be shared with others, for instance. Right? That would be a most common effect of childhood emotional neglect.
And in children, do we see it differently?
you can, in children are not able to really understand what to organize the knowledge of their experience in as a sophisticated way as we do.
Mm-hmm.
So they might feel inadequate and withdrawn from social contact and feel very angry. Because their experience, their feelings, their wants and their needs are not taken into consideration and just feel angry or withdraw, for example, mm-hmm. without really showing a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm.
With adults, you can interpret that as something else. So you might blame yourself for not feeling good enough. You might attribute that to something about your personality or about the things that you say and not connect that with childhood trauma, but still make a connection with something that you may not be doing right or your personal appearance or anything related to you.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So this isn't one of the questions that was submitted, but it's my question as an extension of that one. When I have interviewed successful people, I've noticed a pattern where approximately, I would say, 75 to 80% of them seem to have experienced some sort of hardship or some sort of difficulty in their life, which has carried obviously some negative points, but it's also given them this kind of mutual positive, I would say, tenacity and confidence that seems to run through all of them as a result of what they've been through. So I wondered if emotional neglect carried the same sort of characteristics where there are some positive symptoms or side effects of being emotionally neglected too.
That's a very good question. So you're talking basically about resilience, right?
Mm.
Okay, right. So resilience is highly individual. So people react differently to their traumatic experiences, those being neglect, emotional neglect or abuse or whatever someone, an individual has gone through. Now, in the particular case of emotional neglect, yes, that could happen, I suppose, in a context which the individual that has been neglected feels a great need to feel seen, to feel heard, to feel noticed, not necessarily in a dysfunctional, pathological, people-pleasing way, but has this great wish to connect with life from a very fulfilling perspective. I haven't had it growing up. I felt very isolated. I didn't feel a great sense of connection with people, but I want to have that now.
Mm-hmm.
And be it through work, as you've mentioned, or through an exciting social life or traveling around the world and meeting new people and cultures and countries, visiting new countries. Yes, that could be also a way of channeling what you lacked in childhood, right? And mm-hmm. compensating or investing in that in adulthood. Yes, it makes sense.
That's really positive, actually. Yes. I mean, not that it's a positive thing to experience, but a positive outcome nonetheless.
Absolutely.
What are some of the common ways emotionally neglected adults will parent their children?
Right. So first of all, as a disclaimer, it's nice to say that because of the nature of emotional neglect is kind of an invisible enemy. It's felt in a very abstract way, even though it's felt in the body. It's difficult to really put your finger to really understand what emotional neglect is. So you feel it. There's something missing, but you don't really know why. So if you're not aware, you're probably going to behave in a neglectful way with yourself, and then you do it with your children, and it's not your fault. Of course, if you notice that there's something wrong and you're trying to find information about it, and you find information about emotional neglect, and you have a feeling that you have been neglected yourself and you could be doing the same to your children, great opportunity to stop, self-reflect further, study or see a therapist, and then change your behavior with children. So now, how parents act in an emotional neglectful way with their children. So by not really giving much attention to them in the sense that showing curiosity about their lives in an open way, you're too focused on getting things done and making sure they do this or that right, they behave right, that they go to school, that they're fed, that they have clothing, that they have medical assistance, but you're not really having conversations with your child, you're not having quality time with your child, not playing with your child. You don't know what is going on in your child's life.
Mm-hmm.
So when your child comes home angry or cranky or upset, you don't really validate the child's experience. For instance, oh, you look angry. Has something happened? And then when the child tells you her or his story, you listen.
Mm-hmm.
You don't jump to give them lessons, life lessons, or to try and solve a problem or dismiss the emotions as irrelevant or ugly or bad. So those would be the more common behaviors, emotional neglectful behaviors that parents would have with their children.
So interesting that you say that. I love reading parenting books. And one of the things that I read about was, as an activity with your child, let them play and then sit beside them. And rather than say, oh, you're so clever, or you're so pretty, or you're so handsome, you know, things that parents naturally want to say, it's actually a way that you can engage with their play is to narrate what they're doing, to show that they're being seen, you know. Oh, I see you're putting the car on top of the house. Okay, what's the car doing up there? Okay, the car is driving down the house. And that kind of engagement makes the child feel seen. And that's what the book said. So then I thought, oh, I'm going to try that. And I tried that. And my daughter really enjoyed that because I think she felt that I was in the play with her. Yeah. So that was really effective, and it was a time where I thought, oh, wow, the book has really translated well into a practical activity.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Next question. I was in a very toxic relationship, and I feel I can't grasp what is and what isn't toxic anymore, as it was so long. Any easy way to maybe find a solution of when a toxic relationship starts? In brackets, I have anxiety, so I overthink everything.
Right. That's a very interesting question. Mm-hmm. And it goes with the theme of this, right? Emotional neglect. And of course, toxic relationships is a big theme as well. How do you find yourself in a toxic relationship? How can you tell if a relationship is toxic? So first of all, if you have a good connection with your body, that will probably not be a matter of concern to you, because you honor your body's experience. So you grew up, then again, in an environment that was nurturing, emotionally nurturing. So it taught you that the feeling what you feel and expressing what you feel in a non-abusive way when we talk about negative emotions is healthy, that you can trust your emotions as great sources of wisdom. You have a very healthy relationship with your body. So when someone upsets you, when someone attacks you, when someone neglects you, your body is screaming and telling you what is going on, and you listen to your body. Now, if you have suffered emotional neglect, you are going to dismiss that information. because through your conditioning, you learned that negative emotions don't have a lot of purpose. They make you feel uncomfortable and you need to deal with them, and that's it. They are sometimes even an annoyance. So you are there with someone that is making you feel guilty, that the motivation that you have to meet them is probably obligation, fear. And you don't feel good in their presence. They make comments that don't make you feel appreciated. Your boundaries are not respected. And your body is screaming, no, no, this is not good for you. And you're not listening. So my advice, my recommendation would be, when you are in a relational context, especially when you meet new people, listen to your body. Be present in the moment. Try to be present. Think, if you can't bring yourself to be present when you are with someone, after you've met them, think, how was I with that person? Did I feel good? Did that person make me feel good? Did I feel a sense of flow? Did we look at each other in the eye? Did we laugh? Did we have a good time? How do I feel about meeting this person again? Do I really want to do it? Am I forcing myself to meet this person because I have to? Or because I feel very lonely? Because I have no other options? What is going on here? Validate the experience and not necessarily your memory of the experience. This is another one. The experiencing self is much more accurate. Try to remember, be in the moment better than remembering. Be in the moment and think, how is this affecting me? Oh, I don't feel good. Okay, so this is it. When you go back and you think, oh, has this affected me in a good way or not? Oh, not really, but, you know, I haven't got many friends and she's not that bad or he's not that bad. And you start editing the memory, then you are in trouble. Mm-hmm. Right? So try to connect with the experiencing self and not the remembering self. Honor your body.
Very good. Next question. When is the time to ask for outside help in relationships?
Right. So I'm supposing that this is about a loving relationship.
Yeah. And I assume that outside help means professional help.
Right. Okay.
Well. Yeah.
So couples counseling. It's of course about the needs and the wants and the feelings of everyone involved. So if both of you have exhausted all attempts of trying to improve the relationship, trying to communicate better, you have talked about it, you have tried different things, and you're still not satisfied with what you have achieved. You feel like you would like better tools, you feel a bit lost, or you feel that after this process, you're still not getting heard, your voice, your needs, your wants are not being validated by your partner. You can suggest that to your partner, or both of you can go and try to find help.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That actually leads me on nicely to the next one, which is, I'll read it out exactly as written. Was curious to know how to have the conversation with the significant other about getting help or seeing a therapist when they think all therapists are BS and it's money wasted. I didn't even find it funny when I read it the first time. Now that I'm reading it to your face, I'm finding it funny.
It is a very good question.
Mm.
Right. Now, let's remind ourselves that therapy is a collaborative process. Right? So both therapist and his or her clients need to be united in this. This is a group effort. So when you approach when you suggest to your partner, oh, what you think about us going to therapy, and that's the response you get, you need to honor your partner's feelings.
Okay.
And you probably need to honor your own. Do you want to go to therapy with someone that thinks that therapy is BS and a waste of time and money? How do you think that that is going to affect the process? How is that going to make you feel when you're sitting there, right, with your therapist? When you have there's someone next to you that is not engaging, is not identifying with it the same way you do, right? People are entitled to feel differently about things. So honoring everyone's experiences, opinions, feelings is, I think, very important. Having said that, if you find that this is something, it's the last thing that you can think of to improve the relationship, and your partner is not willing to do that, then that is also great information for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then what are you going to do with that?
I mean, obviously I'm a layperson speaking here, not a specialist at all, but is it inappropriate then to give an ultimatum and say, you know, I've exhausted all options with you and this is really the last thing that I have hope for. Are you prepared to try this with me to move our relationship forward?
I have seen that before. Mm. And I don't think it's necessarily bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's unfortunate that he has come to that, comes to that. But then I can also understand that person's position, right? Mm-hmm. The person is still trying. Let's remind ourselves of that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Well, that's all the questions that we have time for today. But I do have a sneaky little question that I wanted to add in there. For my other podcasts, I have like a signature question that I end each episode with. And I've just thought this morning that this definitely needs one too. And feel free, you know, if it's too personal, you don't have to answer. But how has your career enriched your own life?
Right. Wow, what a wonderful question. So much. So much. I am so fortunate to my job is about sitting down and connecting with people. I feel that I am part of their lives in such a way, in such an intimate and rewarding way. We go on a journey together. We find out what is not working for the client, and we connect and we try to make things better. We try and implement changes. We work together as a team, and we bond through vulnerability. And through that process, I have learned how to do that myself with me. Because our experience is there is so much of it that is universal.
Mm-hmm.
So I as a therapist, I am far from perfect, even though some people would like to think that therapists are different individuals. They're not human. They are. It humbles me to see how much of my own life is reflected or I can see in the lives of my clients. So it's very enriching because I learn a lot from me through the experience of my clients and the ways that they find to cope. Their personal creativity is amazing. I learn so much and I apply. This is a secret now. Don't tell anyone. I apply their coping strategies in my own life. I copy them and it's great. It works. Not everything does. But it has transformed my life, really. It changed my relationship with myself and with others.
Oh, how incredible. Thank you, Michelle. That was wonderful. I have goosebumps now. Thank you so much for doing this. I've actually contacted different professionals from different fields, and it's not always easy for people to speak because they feel that they're speaking on behalf of other professionals, or they feel that it's a difficult position to be in. So thank you for allowing me to ask you these questions and to answer them so graciously as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marina. It's been awesome.
For those of you listening, if you would like to contact Michelle, you can reach her on
Liberty Counseling Luxembourg.
.com. Okay. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye.